You are listening to Let's Talk Tribe, the official Let's Go Tribe podcast.
Swung and lined to deep left field. It is gone!
This is Let's Talk Tribe, the official Let's Go Tribe podcast, episode 166. I'm your host, Matt Lyons, and in this week's episode, we'll continue our over-under previews with Zach Plezak, Cal Quantrill, Jose Ramirez, and a couple others. We'll talk about Aaron Civale's new pitch. It's going to be changing from a standard changeup grip to a split change. See what little history of that pitch, some other players who throw it, and what that could mean for Civale and his arsenal. And of course, we'll talk about Cody Allen, the longtime Cleveland closer, leads the organization in save, 23rd round pick, who turned into a pretty damn good closer. Probably didn't pitch long enough to be Hall of Famer, but he deserves to be remembered. So we're going to do that and talk about his career and place with the Indians. And we asked everybody on Twitter on a poll which position battle they're looking forward to the most in spring training. Got some responses from that. A lot of people's thoughts on the several different battles going on, which we probably won't go too in-depth into it, but whoever wants to hear more about it over on Indians on Deck, they did talk about it more. They went through every battle. So joining me for all that and more is none other Mr. Merritt Rolfing. Merritt, how you doing?
I got a new bandana, so that's what's going on with me. So, you know, it's a pretty pretty big day in the Rolfing household.
Have you watched spring training interviews where how many, I don't know if they're wearing their like neck gaiters as bandanas, but bandanas are very big in Cleveland Indians training camp right now. Oscar Mercado has one. Josh Nelson has one.
I started wearing them because I bought a bunch to wear as masks, but it turns out they're bad at that. So now I just have cool hair bands all the time. Yeah,
aren't they actually worse? Didn't they find they like split the particles and make it worse?
Yeah, somehow it's worse than wearing nothing at all, which I thought was pretty cool. I was like, damn, I just spent $8 on 12 of these. Shit.
Well, that's why I've at least seen Oscar Mercado and Josh Naylor both have them. And I mean,
who
else was it? Oh, that Phil Maton too.
That is another a look. That is a look that I want fucking Josh Naylor just to rock all the time. That rules.
No, after the podcast, for you and anybody listening, you should go look at Phil Maton's interview from spring training because it was like all of his hair. Don't do it right now. But so anyway, on the site, we've been doing these over-under previews. Of course, on the podcast too, we've been doing them. But so we'll start with Zach Plezak, who zips, projects him 27 games, 148 innings, a little under 8 strikeout per 9, 2.6 walks per 9. I think he's going to get over this no matter what, basically. If he pitches this many innings, if he doesn't, I think he can get over 2.3 war. It's just another one of those things like with Shane Bieber where he does all these things that projections might not be able to catch up to. He tunnels all these pitches well. You actually wrote about it in depth last year that he has.
I did.
He's just so good at hiding his release points and tunneling everything. I think he's going to outperform all these. He's just athletic as hell. I think if anybody can, if like we talked about last week with Bieber, like somebody's going to get to 200 innings again. I think it can be like Zach Plezak just because he's so athletic and the downtime is not going to hinder him, I think, a whole lot. So this is a pretty easy over for me, I pick.
Yeah, this is an easy over. I think he's one of the – I like watching a pitch just because he has such finesse, I guess. I think he's an incredibly smart pitcher. He's demonstrated a lack of smart in other aspects of his life, but I think once he takes the mound, he's absolutely brilliant, and he's going to continue to grow. He's still only, 24 or something like that? 26, so whatever. Who knows? All these.
I mean, still, it's not like – it's not his prime right. Yet even. He's still got a couple of years, so he can still
exactly.
Grow.
And, like, he's – I think the most astounding thing about him from 2019 to 2020 was just the leap that he showed in sophistication of what he was throwing. I think I wrote about this a few times last year. Just he's throwing fastball less even than like Shane Bieber is at this point. He's really featuring his secondary and tertiary stuff and trusting it, and it works. I think this is. Well, they have 2.3 wins. Like, come on now. Like, I mean, I think he's going to strike out 10 guys per 9. He's going to walk 2. Give up some home runs, but I don't think he'll have any home runs even because of the suppressed offensive environment. I think he'll have an ERA in the mid threes probably at worst, and he'll be a 4-win pitcher. Like, I don't know. This is the new Robin to Shane Bieber's Batman that we've gotten used to with Kluber and, you know, insert other pitcher here over the last 7 years or whatever it is. So, yeah, he is going to be an absolute monster. I think this year he's going to be he's getting all-star consideration, I'd assume. But, yeah, he's going to be great. It's going to be fantastic. This is one of the easiest overs, I think, that we have in the entire – even easier, I think, than Bieber's, quite honestly, just because they were so bullish with him. But, yeah, this is insane. 9-9? Come on, he's going to win 20 games. I mean, come on, this is going to be crazy.
Most people agree, too. 80% over, 18 under. That was pretty clear-cut. That.
What are they people saying? What is his arm going to fall off? Is he going to violate COVID-19 regulations 3 times and only pitch 20 games? What's going on here? Come on now.
Yeah, I mean, it is pretty hard to imagine him finishing with a 4-5 ERA, which is basically what Zips has him at. So that's a pretty easy under.
I mean, the only places I think he could really demonstrate a lot of, I mean, growth, obviously, if his stuff gets better, obviously. I mean, that's what it is. But I think he demonstrated last year excellence as it was. Like, even his ERA, he's not going to have a 2.28 ERA, but his fielding independent pitching was 3.39. Like, xFIP was 3.50. So it's assumed he'll be good. And, yeah. He's going to be good. Deal with it, folks.
And the one thing you can look at, like, at his Baseball Savant page, the one thing that looks like it's going to regress is his barrel rate, which is that, like, everything else in his measurements is pretty much great besides his spin rate, which we know he doesn't have a ton of that anyway. But, like, his expected results, his hard hit rate, his expected wOBA, exit velocity, all that is at least 58 or higher percentile. He got barreled a bunch. I don't know what to make of that, really, the fact that apparently they're hitting the ball the right way, but it's not going hard, I guess is what you would say that means.
Well, that which happens is kind of with... It happens with Bieber a lot, too, which is they don't hit the ball very much. That's the thing. It's percentage of the time when the ball is struck if it's a barrel. It's just, I mean, he doesn't throw. And we're going to get into this in a bit with Savala. You know, he's throwing less. The pitch he gets hit the most of any pitch is a fastball. And he's just throwing less of those. Like, I think it would be awesome if he threw 34% fastballs and threw everything else instead. Like, plow that into curve or something. I don't know. Who cares? But another year under his belt with Cleveland kind of watching what he does well and, you know, telling him to do that more. Because while he might have one of the firmer fastballs in the rotation right now, he just shouldn't throw it. Fastballs are stupid, and no one should ever throw a fastball.
Our next one, Austin Hedges, catcher. This one's, I mean, we had a couple of fun ones in a row. This one's not very fun. It's Zips put him at, it's Austin Hedges. He's a backup catcher. Zips put him at 330 plate appearances, which seems insane to me. Which Zips is, it doesn't care about like roster spots or anything. I did look this up between, but so it's just kind of saying, I guess it's going on trends based on what he's played before, but I just think he gets the under. This is just because I don't think he plays that much. Even if he does, I think like Zips projection would be pretty awful offensively, which I think he would be. A 61 WRC plus doesn't seem, maybe he'll do better than that. Maybe he'll slug a little better or walk a little better, but I think he's pretty close to that. I do think though, it's not that he's a terrible player. I think WAR doesn't value defense as much as it probably should, and as much I'm sure Cleveland has more advanced metrics than we do to measure this kind of thing because they have Roberto Perez and they lead on him so much in Austin Hedges. They want to pay him so much money, I mean, comparatively to everybody else. But so I think he'll be under the 0.5 WAR. I also don't think he'll be just complete dead weight just because I think he's more valuable in ways than what we can measure right now. Of course, we have like framing and stuff, and I'm sure I didn't look at Pakoda, but I'm pretty sure they probably have him better than 0.5 WAR. But yeah, either way, I took the under on this one just because I don't think he plays that much and WAR doesn't value what he does.
I will take the over on this one. I think he will play well. I mean, I just got to take a quick look. Last time we had a full season, Perez played 119 games. Like the fact of the matter is, we're going to see Austin Hedges 40 times, right? And I think he will be worth more than half a win. I mean, will he hit much better than 206, 267, 375? No, probably not. Especially now that the offense is going to be suppressed this year, which I'm going to be hammering on forever until I'm wrong. but he's, you know, I mean, he'll have some playing time. He obviously will be kind of in fits and starts. And, you know, admittedly, it was a negative 0.1 WAR guy last year with 35 games under his belt. But no, I think he'll get the over on that. Not by a lot, but Roberto Perez is going to be 32. He just turned 32, and he's a catcher. And I know he hasn't caught a lot of games comparative to, you know, other seasons, but he's only caught more than 73 games once, and that was in 2019. We caught 119 now. Obviously, they had Yan Gomes as well. So they might, honestly, that might happen too, where they kind of do like a platoon thing in a sense. Not so much a platoon, quote-unquote, but like use both of them like 80 or so games. I think this is something we haven't really thought about very much, simply because we just assume Perez is going to be the backstop all the time. But if they value catcher defense, and both of their catchers are garbage offensively, you can be pretty agnostic about who's behind the plate. Obviously, there's way more to it than just putting a guy back there. There's no pitchers and relationship and understand the defense and everything like that. But I think there's a chance I honestly think there's a small to moderate chance that he gets like, if more than 50 games played. Perez is under 110 games. And if that's the case, then he will cruise past any of these compiling projections, at least.
Our next one, I think, is a pretty easy hammer the over on this one, is Cal Quantrill. I think he's one of the, if not exciting, just unique pitchers that we're going to be watching this year because of the way he throws a sinker slider. Obviously, a sinker, it sinks more than other sinkers do. Most are like side to side with a two-seamer. Or no, other way around. His goes side to side more than sinks. as two seamer. His slider goes more up and down, which is kind of a unique thing. Looking at his arsenal is different. And also, Zips doesn't project ground ball rates, but I think like Steamer does. They have him at 43.8%. I think he can outperform that quite a bit. Zips itself has him at 4.9 ERA, 7 strikeouts per 9, 2.93 walks per 9, 33 games, 22 starting. So it sees him as starting as a starter at some point, going to the bullpen. I think he starts the year as a pitcher and then or as a starter, and I would hope that he sticks there. If not, even if he does go to the bullpen at some point, I think his stuff plays better in the bullpen anyway. So even if he gets moved there, I think he outpitches this and he can beat the 1.4 WAR that Zips puts him at. Chris Davies took the under on this one. He made some good points. The fact that, I mean, we've seen Quantrill's pitched a little bit for San Diego, pitched some for Cleveland, and the results of the actual batting events have not been in Quantrill's favor. So maybe he's changed something, but if he hasn't, we've already kind of seen what his stuff does, and then people can just hit it pretty effectively. So I guess I'm just hoping that he's a unique enough combo that he has that he can work with it. Even if it's just two pitches, he also has a changeup he can use against lefties, but I think he can ride that to over 1.5 WAR and way better than almost 5 ERA. So
I mean, I'm of two minds about this because there's a reason this sinker went out of vogue, right? Everyone just got so much better at hitting low balls, and the high sinker just gets hit anyway. But I don't know. Damn, this is a hard one. I've been thinking about this one all day.
I think I'm just getting caught up in the Cal Quantrill hype because I really want him to be good. He seems like a fun pitcher.
Between the trades and the pitching, they deserve more than the benefit of that, right? Like whenever they make a trade and they trade away one of our favorite players for something else, like it sucks, but they deserve the benefit of that. And when they get a pitcher who no numbers here tell me that he's going to be any good, like he had one time that he had an ERA under 367, even in the minors, and that was 348. Like, he's not even a good ground ball pitcher for a sinker baller. So I can't, like, it doesn't make any sense that he'd be good. No, I mean, you know, it's a pitcher with it Cleveland has now. And so I think less than, like, assuming he gets 125 innings pitched, I think one and a half wins above replacement is easy going for him. The strikeout rate, I mean, it seems low. Walk rate seems high. So, yeah. And again, the home run rate thing will continue to be a bit of a bugaboo on these projections because of what I think is going to happen with the ball. But I'll take a not a big over, but like a 2-win guy. Yeah, that's fine. I'll take it.
Yeah. I mean, that was another one. Same as above, 82% over, 18 under. So that was a pretty big. People believe in Cal Quantrill. I think a lot of people are just excited about him. You mentioned talk about last week, you always have the what's the way you described it? The always one prospect that we want him to be good and we follow him, kind of hype him up to ourselves. But Cal Quantrill's like that for a pitcher right now.
Yeah, exactly.
Which this I want him to be good.
He's going to be a good one. I mean, I'm doing that to myself with Josh Naylor. Like, yeah, that's who I brought up. What was the last time? Bradley Zimmer, of course.
Yeah, he's the one we kind of cling to, and then it's slowly fading. But Cal Quantrill for me now. Yeah,
Josh Naylor is that's one I'm excited for. Like, when I'm going to tune in to watch his spring training at bats and analyze them way too deeply. Go. But he waited. He took that pitch this time. Very nice. So
write that down.
Very talented. Excellent. Okay. Yeah. So, yeah, I'll take you over on that one.
Yeah. So our next one, most likely, this is going to be the highest position player WAR on the team, Jose Ramirez. Zips gives him a really good projection. 619 plate appearances, 32 home runs, 287, 373, 559 slash. That's 137 WRC plus, 5.6 WAR. That's really high. I also think that could just be like the baseline for Jose Ramirez. I think he's so good. Like, this, I could see this as a good projection, but also the bottom. I don't think he goes under this unless there's a disaster. But as long as he's gotten over whatever messed him up at the end of 2018, beginning of 2019, I don't see how he goes under this. Just because
we say
he's such a good hitter,
messed him up at the end of 2018. He was an 8-1 player. He was so good in 2018. Well,
remember how good he could have been if he didn't tank the last, what was it, a couple months? He was just awful.
Yeah, but he would have been a runaway MVP winner probably that year. I mean, probably not, because I think Mike Trout won that year. But yeah, I'll take the over on this one. Who cares, man? Come on. I mean, goddamn, look how low they have his WRC plus. That's crazy to me. That's going to be 10 points higher right there. He's going to walk in the third. I mean, who's going to pitch to him anyway? Like, that's the thing. Like, the only thing he's going to see are home run pitches. Like, shoot, man.
It kind of puts him between the what he was before, which is like Michael Brantley, where he made a bunch of contact, didn't hit a bunch of hard balls, but would never miss anything. And also what he is now, which is just like a home run powerhouse. So he's somewhere between the two, which is still a very good offensive player. But I think as a power hitter, fuck the dead ball. I think he's still going to crush home runs even with it. Maybe just more alternative doubles for him, just because of he can still hit the ball just so damn hard. They're going to go off the wall. But me and Blake, we read him separately, but we both kind of brought up the fact that MLB Network didn't put him in their top 10 players. Like, nobody did.
crazy.
Corey Seager was on some people's lists ahead of Jose Ramirez. Not to slander Francisco Lindor if he was traded, but I think Jose Ramirez is better than Lindor, which I think most Cleveland fans agree with that at this point.
Jose Ramirez is only 28 years old.
It's ridiculous.
That's the thing.
And he's still signed for a few years. He's the
He is incredible. Absolutely incredible. Yeah, he signed for a few more years. He's putting together the first half of a Hall of Fame career. The 2020 job is going to make the WAR count look a little wonky, but he's been excellent now for 6 years, basically. And he's not getting better and changing and evolving. And he was just so, I know that he kind of got hot at the right time in 2020, but he probably would have cooled off a little bit and been back to that 146 WRC plus kind of a guy that he was in 2017, 2018. But goddamn. And I think the most impressive thing about him ever was how he turned around 2019. He was dog shit, to be quite honest. And then you look at his batting line now and you go, it's kind of had a weird down year. That's weird. But no, he was just incredible for the second half. So yeah, I'll take the over on that one. Who cares, man?
Yeah, the fact that he changed his whole approach, it didn't work, and then he just casually changed it back and was better than before is just, that shows you, I don't know how you slow him down. If he gets figured out by pitchers, he'll just change again. And if the dead ball does impact him, he'll just find another way to hit more ball. He'll turn back into Michael Brantley because he can just do that.
Just do this. Yeah, I'll just hit 350 this year then. Yeah. All right, fine. that level of, and same thing we were talking about with Plesac, that level of it's hard to really encapsulate that as athleticism. That's just what that is. That's that ability to respond things, it's incredible, absolutely incredible. Unabashed top dog and out of the damn Lindor's shadow.
And he should be a top 10 goddamn player in baseball. So 74% agreed with that one, 26 under for Jose Ramirez. I think that was pretty easy over one. Our next one, Oscar Mercado, is not quite as easy as an over if you want to believe in him.
This is a tough one.
Yeah, 523 plate appearances, 11 home runs, 71 WRC plus. I think he even mentioned this year, again, I was watching the interviews in spring training, he's talked about how last year just kind of messed with his head. Just the fact that, I don't think it's like he's mentally weak or anything, he's just human. It was a weird year, all these weird protocols, so maybe this year will be a little bit more back to normal, it'll help him out. Remember he mentioned at one point that, I think it was Michael Brantley helped Lindor, and then Lindor helped Oscar Mercado, something like that. So we know that Oscar Mercado is just kind of like a nervous kid once in a while, which I'd imagine everybody is. But I would hope that once he gets over that, and if we're back to a normal year in 2021, he can be closer to what he was in his rookie year.
And again, we're still talking about a guy who has 575 plate appearances as a major leaguer. 93 of those were in the midst of a pandemic. So it's that's going to mess with things. You'll probably strike out more, and the way the season was in particular, the way relievers were being used. I'll be honest, I'm cautiously excited about this season for Oscar Mercado. I don't think he's going to break out and have like a 125 WRC plus or something like that. I think he'd hit 250 with a 310 on base percentage, which obviously, again, we're just going, look at this, but that's basically league average. And he can play defense pretty good too, so I'll take a slight over on that one.
If he can hold down center field and fend off Billy Hamilton, who doesn't have to play more than once a year, then that solves a lot of problems. If he can stay in center field, Eddie Rosario one of the corners, and then Nolan Jones comes up eventually, that's not the worst outfield in baseball. Hopefully, even mention Josh Naylor, and we always forget Eddie Rosario. But Josh Naylor and Daniel Johnson will be out there somewhere eventually too. So. If Oscar Mercado can hold on center field, maybe they have a real outfield for once.
Maybe they're going to have an outfield of Rosario, Naylor, and Jones. Or Rosario, Naylor, and
Naylor. Johnson. He's just everywhere.
He's going to force
Rosario, Naylor, and Johnson sounds like a law firm. That's the most law firm he sounds.
It does, actually.
Something about the cadence of it really works well.
Yeah. Well, it's probably a personal injury? No. Maybe they do taxes.
Oh, definitely. It's personal. They have a personal injury.
They have commercials and everything like that?
Oh, okay. Yeah. Rosario. Oscar Mercado, what was it? 40 or 66 said over, 34 under. I thought that'd be a little closer. I felt like more people were giving up on Mercado, but apparently not. A lot said over, which I'm happy
In experiencing these over-unders, it seems like this is probably as close to 50-50 as you're going to get.
Yeah, that's true. That's
to be quite honest, it's either 90-10 or 60-40, one way there, and it's just because, I don't know, whatever, who knows, the internet, baby.
Our next one is somebody just didn't want to take the over on him on Saturday.
I
but whatever,
told
Mayor.
You I was watching Fast and the Furious 6. Come on.
It's fine. I'll take the under and just crush your boy because you didn't want to defend him in the comments. So, Yu Chang, 2021 over under. I said under because I don't think he's going to play a whole lot. Even if he does, I think he'll be bad. I want Yu Chang to be good. I think the power is exciting that he showed in the minors a little bit at least. But he kills it in spring training. Maybe he'll do it again this year and win a role as the utility guy instead of Mike Freeman. I want that. I want him instead of Mike Freeman, but I don't even think he'll get to half a war in the 400 plate appearance that Zip gives him. So
you will not receive him instead of Mike Freeman as utility man. Please remember who your manager is. Please, sir. Do some recollection. You probably have to take the underrun on this one. I mean, let's be honest here. I think if he plays, I think he'll outperform some of these numbers a little bit. Although they're really sleeping. I mean, it's so hard to look at it because, again, 97 career major league plate appearances with a 13.4% walk rate. Like, goddamn, that's pretty weird. But the strikeout rate is also at 26%. So if that's real, then that's a completely different story, quite honestly. And
If he can walk that much, you mean?
Yeah, exactly. And then start running into some balls and zim, zim, zoom. So you're right. I will take the over.
Yeah, you're going to take the over. I would take the over on his on-base percentage. I think he'll walk more than what Zips has in mind. I think that's pretty much legit. He's walked that much quite a bit against major league pitching. He just hasn't homered yet, which we haven't seen, which maybe he won't. I still think it rounds
out. He has homered once. He homered against the Angels, actually.
I don't even recall that home run. I usually remember when prospects hit like their first homer, like Bobby Bradley absolutely obliterated the
ball. I bizarrely vividly remember that homer. I don't even know why, but yeah, he had like three hits that night. It was a great series for him.
Yeah, I want Yu Chang to be good. I've always wanted him to be good just because of the power potential there, but I just don't.
Like we've always said with all the outfielders they have, one of these infielders is going to play and perform.
I mean, if one of the infielders doesn't pan out, they're screwed because they have so many.
Yes. But we said 15, that 5 years ago with their outfielders too, and what happened? There you go.
15% set over, 85 under. I think that was, most of that I think is playing time because nobody's, like even you don't think we got that playing time. But all right, man, that's our over-unders for this week. We'll talk about... if anybody wants to talk about those, you can go on Let's Go Tribe. They're posted every day till we're through with them. I added the other free agents at the end. The Indians have added our boy Brian Shaw, Eddie Rosario, who we keep forgetting exists, but he's there. He'll be coming up soon.
And good, too. So, you know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that'll be a fun one. So Aaron Civale, who I think is somebody that we both like quite a bit and have acknowledged that he could fix some things, but he's been a fun young pitcher. But he told the media last week, quote, "I'm transitioning to a split change from a changeup, just a little bit better pairing with the pitches that I currently have. There's some shortening of the arm path timing sequence. There's a few things that are visibly different. Once we get in the game, I'm sure you'll be able to see some of it. It's a good transition, pretty smooth." We actually saw some of that. There was video posted of him throwing. But yeah, this is a really interesting thing, I thought, just because just splitters are rare in general now. It's mostly like the pitchers coming over from Japan use them. Kenta Maeda is the most popular one. His story is also really cool because he just threw a regular changeup too. And then 2018, he decided, I don't want to use this anymore. And he switched over, and now he has like one of the best changeups in baseball. Obviously, Carlos Carrasco used one and still uses one. His is also kind of unique. It wasn't quite the same. Kenta Maeda is probably the most pure split changeup in baseball by the grip. Carlos Carrasco is a little different. And Danny Salazar didn't even throw a split. He just had this weird thing that he did that he got when he was a kid. It kind of stuck. But all three of them, the point here and the point that Savali is probably trying to get at is that a split changeup will go straight down as opposed to not as much movement as a regular changeup when you do a circle change grip. So what Savali wants to do is just play it off his cutter sinker combination, which again, like was it Contra earlier, like Savali could probably deal to use his sinker less. So if he can get this changeup to work more, work better, use his curveball more, maybe he can work that with his cutter. So I'll be interested to see what he does when we actually get into games. Like he said, when we see it in games, it'll make a difference, he said. But it's really interesting because he's going to be changing his grip, I would assume, unless he's doing the Salazar thing and just throwing a split-ish changeup. But it'll be fun to watch.
Yeah, no, that pitcher list article you linked to in the article you wrote, they had an excellent point there that at some point some pitcher is going to just stop throwing fastballs, four seamers, because why do it? If you can't throw a 96, like, and Savali cannot, just throw garbage. Just be a total garbage man. You know, guys like Kyle Hendricks does this, I suppose. And honestly, if Cleveland can get their own Kyle Hendricks, I am ecstatic. I love watching that dude pitch.
Yeah, anybody just throws junk is just good and fun
like,
to watch.
Junk, good, tasty, delicious junk that's all high quality. Like, this is going to be fantastic. Like, this will allow his changeup to hide a bit more, I think, in the sinker. I think that's probably the goal here in particular. And this is one of the fun parts of especially getting to watch a team like Cleveland where, because I'm sure he didn't do this by himself, right? This wasn't just a thought he had one day. This had to have been a conversation he had with someone in the pitching development department at Cleveland, with Cleveland, saying, you know, if you did maybe this instead.
If it was some other pitcher, maybe. But I think Savali would maybe do this himself. There was even a call or article this week that Karinchak just saw the guy in the Astros who threw a bunch of curveballs in the playoffs that one year.
Lance McCullers?
I think so, yeah. Karinchak watched that and just Googled how to throw a change or a curveball, and then he did that, and now that's his curveball. Huh, well, so I would maybe Savali did that. But also, I think even if he did, he could go to the Cleveland, just the pitch factory they have, any number of people there, and ask how to do it. And then
it could have been something he can, maybe I should do this instead, because maybe he saw the effect Maeda had and things like that. And then they said, he's like, I want to do this. And they're like, okay, well, just do this then. And all right.
Yeah. And you could imagine in like a lesser organization, like, what are you talking about? That's not how we throw a changeup. You got your stuff, it works. Stick with
it. Throw your damn pitch. We don't need you to be an ace. We need you to be a number three. Don't you want four aces? No, we tried that once and we didn't win the World Series. So we're trying
to damn kids, get off your phones. Looking at other pitches.
But no, it's a lot of fun. This is the fun part about having younger players and pitchers in particular. You get to watch them change and get better at stuff. I mean, goddamn, how much fun was it to watch Corey Kluber become a superstar over a period of 3 years, or more recently, obviously Shane Bieber. What the hell? That was a funny one in particular, because it's just his first start. They referenced Corey Kluber, but Tito was like, I'm only saying it because of his mentality, but it's actually because he's better than him. Now Savali's doing this, and I don't know, he's an absolute soulless monster, as far as I can tell. If he can do it, he can do it. He's good at spinning the ball too. So he must have long fingers or something.
So I imagine if you do a splitter, you're gonna have, because it is literally like you do a Vulcan symbol and then you grip it.
I'm gonna go to a game and Aaron, how big are your hands?
Show me your hands.
Show me your fingers. Hey.
I got this ruler. Can you touch it for me?
Can you just you can measure and tell me the number. Anything. Also measure all the other pitchers, because I need a frame of reference. So thank you.
That seems like something that I know the NFL does, the combine, where they probably measure too many things, but I'm surprised baseball doesn't do that more. Where they have, I'm sure they do when they're drafting and stuff.
Everyone just measures your gumption. Come on,
measures your grit. Yeah, grit level.
Yeah, I'm sure they're like, how big are your hands? This big. That's pretty big. Good.
All right. Sweet. Great.
Nice.
But yeah, it'll be fun to watch. And like the pitcher list article, their whole thing too was the fact that Mike Ejito, he wanted him to play off he wanted to use his curveball more, basically, and quit using the sinker.
We all want that, obviously.
Of course, yeah. But this is just another way. This is almost better, I think, if you can get the drop on your changeup and have another pitch instead of just the curveball. Like, that's three levels of, you've got your cutter going one direction and then your changeup and curveball dropping two different rates. And the other thing, like, if he has a regular changeup, it doesn't do anything for him, because he can't throw gas, so it's not like he has a 15 mile per hour difference on his changeup and fastball, so might as well make the thing move.
Yeah, he's the thing that can hide in his other pitches, so that's really what we do here, is just pitches that do different, they do the same thing but then don't do the same thing, and he can get his own pitching ninja graphic where the pitch ends up in the four different corners of the strike zone.
Yeah, another thing that happened this week, which you wrote about, is Cody Allen calling it a career, Cleveland's career save leader, drafted in the 23rd round. You also noted, was it High Point University College?
High Point University, home of the largest chest of drawers.
And Cody Allen. We got drawers and Cody Allen, but he retired.
I learned so much about a place in the middle of goddamn nowhere. It was fantastic.
I enjoyed that little route down Cody Allen's history, because it's a thing. He just kind of came out of nowhere, both physically and baseball-y. He was a late round pick. He wasn't a closer right away, obviously, but
he was a late round pick and then a later round pick. I think that is the part that I think gets glossed over a little bit. He fell backwards, and that's just, I don't get it. I mean, like I said in the article, I hesitate to say he didn't have like a projectable frame, because he is still 6'1", he's like 200 pounds, but like, that's not huge in baseball terms or sports terms. It's normal size, basically. But he just kind of came out of nowhere. Then that draft was insane, man. The 2011 MLB draft, like the number of players who were in that are absolutely, who touched who touched Cleveland like directly. Trevor Bauer, obviously, but it's just so many names in there. You're just like,
wasn't that the Lindor draft too?
Lindor. Yeah, exactly. I think Brian Shaw was drafted this draft too, but
that's one of the all around deep drafts too, isn't it? It's not like just Cleveland. It's like everybody, I think, is crazy in that draft.
Yeah, like Javi Baez went one after George Springer's in there. Brandon Nimmo, if you hear about that. Highest pick to date for a player from Wyoming. Jose Fernandez was in that one. Sonny Gray. I just player after one player, but Jackie Bradley Jr. Like, yeah, no, it's really an amazing draft. And buried down in the 23rd round is a man who is effectively the, you know, I mean, you could argue one of the three or four best closers in Cleveland history. So, yeah, pretty impressive career all in all. You can't hate him.
Chicano Squad tells the story of Houston's first ever all-Latino homicide squad, formed in the 1970s to face a growing number of unsolved murders in their own community.
None of us knew what we were up against.
A story of five young officers torn between the neighborhoods that raised them.
I had a Mexican flag on my desk, and they told me, hey, the lieutenant doesn't want that Mexican flag over there.
And the badges they wore.
Some of my friends stopped talking to me.
Against impossible odds, they faced murders.
As soon as she walks outside, they shot her 14 times.
Cartels.
The Colombians were, man, they would execute you, kill you.
Kidnappings.
One morning they woke up and the baby was gone.
And more.
They just flew this guy in from Colombia and he's tracking you down. He wants to kill you.
But nobody wants to hear a story about a homicide squad that failed, right? My name is Cristela Alonso, and this is the story of the Chicano Squad. Listen to Chicano Squad now on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen.
Yeah, and I've never made an all-star team, which I just realized today, which seems insane that he was, because he doesn't have longevity to be like a Hall of Famer. He's not going to get a statue or be in the Hall of Famer thing. But he was like that five-year span, there was very few people better than him. Part of that, I guess, was Andrew Miller was there and kind of buried him. But also, I mean, it's reversed. If Tito's even said that if he didn't have Cody Allen and Brian Shaw doing what they do, he wouldn't have been able to use Andrew Miller the way he did. And then Cody Allen just doesn't get an all-star game. I guess that's cause probably because he was a closer and they were better quote unquote closers. So they just didn't include him, but it seems kind of dumb that he didn't get one. But, I mean, he also had 2016 was probably the best, obviously the best month of his career, 13 innings pitched, 24 strikeouts, five walks, no earned runs, including, I think he closed out a 1-0 game in the play in the World Series. I think he pitched a couple innings in the game seven loss too. So, just a ridiculous pitcher all around. He pitched with the Angels. It was a disaster. They DFA'd him partway through the season. And then he bounced between the Cubs, Twins, and Rangers in the minor leagues last year, but didn't make it anywhere. Which, if you couldn't make it in 2020 as a reliever somewhere, as an established reliever, it's, I get it, Cody. It's time to go. That's probably what made him realize it. But yeah, I guess even I would assume that would have been Brian Shaw that retired before Cody Allen, just based on mileage on the arm. But Brian Shaw is still kicking, and Cody Allen's now retired.
You know who the first batter that Cody Allen faced was?
Who's that?
Matt Wieters. That's a fun one.
Joe Mauer with power. I remember that when he came up. That was his big thing. He was not Joe Mauer with power, as it turned out.
He was a good catcher. Four wins in 2012 with the Orioles. Cody Allen's first appearance, walk, ground out, strike out, ground out. So there you go. A classic classic outing by our boy.
Which, yeah, everybody was so mad at Cody Allen all the time. Even when he, of course, now that he's retired, everybody loves him. Nobody will admit that they hated him for a long stretch of time. But there's no reason to hate Cody Allen. He was a great closer.
I think I mentioned in the article, like, no closer is going to be Mariano Rivera. And that son of a bitch made it much harder to be a closer for everyone else. Because it's like, what do you want from me? He had a perfect pitch. So you want a guy who can go out there and, you know, get three outs pretty easily. And I think Cody Allen did that. I mean, I've wrote about it, you know, in the article. Again, he did that better than all but like maybe four or five different pitchers for a span of time there that led to Cleveland making it to the World Series, where he was, I think, a vital key in allowing Cleveland to kind of navigate the fact that they only had one good starting pitcher. Like, that's important, I think. And he was, it'll be hard to find it. Now, of course, they have Cody Allen jacked up to 11. So.
Which is fix what, that issue Karen
pretty,
Jack?
Yeah. Yeah, fix that issue pretty quickly. But I mean, you know,
Cody who? I never heard of him.
So I think that's I won't say it's sad. It's kind of a it's funny that he will so immediately obliterate any like memories of Cody Allen because he's just so insane like in every single way. So
and he is too. He's exactly Cody Allen jacked up to 11.
Yeah, he throws fastballs and just a hammer ass curve, and it's just. He's just insane. Whereas Cody Allen was just very calm looking all the time. I don't think I don't have memories of him getting like hype about things. But
now I wonder if Karinchak's over the topness and just craziness does that help him as far as people that are going to hate him when he loses games as saves? Like they're going to be focusing on that he's just this fun crazy guy instead of Cody Allen who is so quiet and you only really notice him when he loses. I feel like if you're Karen Chak and you have this big personality and you're biting your glove and flip it and all that stuff, people talk about that more than just the games you blew. Because that's part of the thing I think with Allen is that he pitched so well so many times, but nobody paid attention to it just because he was so consistent. But
he just walk out there through and walk in. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He was very quiet about everything, you know, thinking about the gigantic chest of drawers he was going to build later.
Right, Merritt. This week, we asked our poll question at Let's Go Tribe. We want to let people know what they thought of spring training. We asked which spring training position battle are you most interested in? We said fifth starter, outfield, first base, or bullpen. Outfield came away with the vast majority of this one, 59.1%. I thought it'd be a little closer. A lot of people also noted the fact that the two are kind of tied, like first base and outfield. What happens in one will determine what happens with the other because of Josh Naylor and because of Jake Bowers. So like if Bobby Bradley comes away with first base, wins it immediately, and that's it, then you've got Bowers and Baylor or Naylor working in somewhere in the outfield. If Bobby Bradley's just terrible and first base is open, maybe then you have Naylor and Bowers working out there. So it all depends really on Bobby Bradley in a way. But yeah, so not a lot of people care about the bullpen, which I kind of agree with. It's a bullpen. It'll be shifted around a lot. Indians have proved they can put anybody back there. And
that in like the first or the top three or four positions already taken, like effectively, like the names we're going to see the most of, write them down, you know, write them down in pen. You'll be fine there. But yeah, I just can't believe that people were that interested in the outfield.
Yeah. It just seems like we've had it every year now that it's not really something I'm excited about anymore. First base is the one I voted for because I want to see Bobby Bradley and see if Jake Bowers is different now. Like if he worked at something in the extended training site, and because he has no more options, so he's going to be somewhere. They're either going to DFA him and hope he gets through waivers or just stick him at first base. So I want to see what happens there. I'm excited about Bobby Bradley, big Bobby Dingers, but also Jake Bowers, whatever happens there.
I didn't really think of it that way in terms of like, I'm excited to see the young players, see if they've developed in any way to get better, right? Like you mentioned with Bradley, Bowers, or Naylor, like any one of those three, I want them to turn into, I don't know, a George Springer-esque offensive player. Why not? Is that so much to ask? No, it's not.
Just want one George Springer. Come on.
Just one, please. So that's more of a developmental thing. I don't know. I'm always excited to see who the fifth starter is going to be because we've gotten such amazing performance out of the team's ability to develop pitching. It's always fun to see what they do with another scrap heap guy, or it ends up being Adam Plutko. So it's that's definitely got an ebb and a flow action to it, but that would have been my choice, quite honestly, because I think it's because I'm tired of thinking about the outfield. It could be part of it as well. So I'm just like, please, no. Just
it's more anxiety-inducing than anything, because the fact that Billy Hamilton might win a spot out of spring training is just gives me heart palpitations. So I'm also not excited about it for that reason.
I mean, are we really even wondering about more than one spot on the outfield? You know, because like Hamilton is going to be a bench guy.
Well, is he? Well, I mean, Tito told him that somewhere I saw that Tito told him if Oscar Mercado doesn't win it or Bradley Zimmer doesn't win it, he should be ready to get a few starts out there, which is terrifying. But I would hope it's only right field we're trying to fill out, but it might be center too.
But I don't want Josh Naylor to play right field. He's slow. No.
We're running into the problem if we're running out of spaces for these maybe good, maybe not great players. And in the comments at Hoodring, Zach, he said, the spring training battle I'm most interested in is the one in my head between being optimistic, believing this team can win a World Series on accident, or being realistic and just hoping for a winning record, which I feel that a lot.
Guy on Twitter, it is February the 22nd as we record this. There is no space for anything except unbridled optimism. Once the fake games start getting played, then we can start getting worked up. Like, all he does is strike out or things like that. Or his velocity is shit. You know, stuff like that. But right now,
World Series.
Five wins, easy. Easy.
Taking the over.
Yep.
Yeah. I don't know. It's just so hard watching him strip down and then trying to be excited about again in spring training. I am. I'm excited about the team, the parts that we can be excited about. But there's just so much that they could have done, which I think is depressing. But
oh yeah, I know. I mean, this is one of those things where it behooves one to not reflect on things.
Let's stop reflection. It's just not good. You
know, it's like I was having a conversation with my wife over the weekend. It's just like, you know, every now and then we just gotta, like, when you're not doing anything, you kind of sit up and stare off in the space. You're like, good Lord, this has been an entire goddamn year. it behooves one not to think about what's been happening the last year. Just focus on something stupid. There's a reason I'm playing Grand Theft Auto 4 again. Like, I need a distraction. So it's healthy to think about the positives and not the fact that they just traded away what could have been a franchise cornerstone and also everything else that they've done. And they're like,
let's not focus on that. Let's just ignore. And the fact that they won't be able to re-sign Shane Bieber and he'll be gone in a couple years. Let's not think about that. Just think about this year.
It'll be fine. No, this is fine. Everything's good now and we're moving forward and onward and upward. And, you know, it's not like these teams make any money. I mean, come on.
They're poor.
They're all poor. All of them.
Didn't you see that poor small market San Diego team couldn't even sign their shortstop to a long-term deal?
It's very sad. Couldn't even give him $400 million. Very sad. How sad. How incredibly sad.
At Fran Mill Reyes, or Fran Mill's eyebrow, LaMole. We can make a thing out of anything now. He said, I think first base is crucial. Are you going to give Bowers and Bradley a shot before giving it to Josh Naylor every day? Josh Naylor should be in the lineup every day, and experimenting with Bowers and Bobby Bradley is risky. Is it worth platooning Josh so you can figure out what you have at first base? That's sort of what we said, but also I think it's between the three of them, I guess Josh Naylor is the least volatile, isn't he? Unless Jake Bowers really fixes something.
You know what I love about Josh Naylor is nothing in his batting line anywhere screams, this guy is our offensive fucking threat.
This is our threat right here.
Like, this is our boy. He had, oh my God. Again, I'm a big nay head, but this is not.
But I mean, between the three, who else is more reliable? Is Jake Bowers? I guess he probably has a higher floor than everybody else. If you're going that route, Bobby Bradley probably has the highest ceiling, and Josh Naylor is just somewhere in the middle, is the way I would put him, I guess.
I would. I'm just looking at his numbers real quick. I think that, honestly, Josh Naylor has a higher floor than Jake Bowers. And that's not a very nice thing to say, but what are you going to do?
I mean, it's what we've seen. If something changed with Bowers, then sure, we can change. But
right, exactly.
Based on what we've seen, it's not.
We literally haven't seen him in 2 years, effectively. I mean, Naylor definitely hit when he was in the minors. I mean, his last minor league season, you know, 54 games, he hit 314, 389, 587, 547, which is, I mean, that's better than anything Bowers put together offensively in the minors, right?
Bowers was pretty good in the minors, wasn't he? I feel like that's why we were excited about him, because he walked a lot in the minors.
I think we were excited about him because we were because we had what's his name stolen from us, so we had to get worked up about
this. Yeah. No, Jake Bowers is really good in the minors. Holy cow!
He was good, but he never hit for a lot of power. Like he never had a slugging percentage over what 426 at any given time. It was all projectable because he was only 20 years old. Whereas Josh Naylor, who is younger, was much more. You know, was better offensively. The environment's a little bit different, obviously, because he was playing in a different yard and Pacific Coast League, stuff like that, but still.
That'll do it for us this week. If you haven't already, if you're on Spotify, iTunes, leave us a review wherever you listen to podcasts. Follow us on Twitter. I'm at Matt RLY. Merritt is at Merrill Lunch, like Merrill Lynch, but with the lunch. At Let's Go Tribe on Twitter, Facebook, where you find, of course, letsgotribe.com. Merritt, talk to you next week.
I'll be there.